Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Powerful Patient. And once again, Robin and I have stolen the microphone. Joyce is off gallivanting in the she's either in the Middle East or in Asia. I think she's in India someplace right now, or Nepal or someplace exotic. And we're stuck here doing the normal duties. And Robin, we have a fascinating guest today. Very fascinating.
Yes, we certainly do. Her brother has one of the rarest diseases that I think anybody's ever heard of. It's not even listed on rare disease sites. And fortunately, he is disease-free now. He's free of his cancer after 6 years, 6 years after stage 4 diagnosis. So that is really miraculous. And because of her brother's history, she started some public action, some patient advocacy, medical advocacy. They have a medical organization for this now. It's just fantastic work. So we're really happy to welcome our guest today.
Yes, and Robin, I, like you, I am impressed with this lady. The more I hear about the work that she has done, and I've had the privilege of spending a little bit of time with her, and she and I served together on a few programs and committees and stuff. But we're pleased to welcome Cora Connor. Cora, welcome to The Powerful Patient.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a privilege,
well,
you know.
It really is. This is wonderful because The Powerful Patient exists to bring knowledge and power to patients who never knew that there were other people like them in the world and that they could band together and do things.
You know, a couple of years ago, I attended a kidney cancer symposium in Chicago that was operated by the Kidney Cancer Association. And they had a doctor there from MD Anderson, Dr. J.J. Gal. And he spoke on renal medullary carcinoma. And I had heard a little bit about it, but he made a statement during his presentation that that has echoed in my mind numerous times. And basically what he said, and this is almost a direct quote from his presentation, he said, "It's very important for us to understand the biology of this tumor and also to develop new therapies for these young, productive but very unfortunate patients." So, Cora, tell us a little bit about renal medullary carcinoma.
Renal medullary carcinoma is an extremely rare and devastating kidney cancer. It affects young individuals who have sickle cell trait, sometimes sickle cell disease. And it's extremely aggressive and in a lot of cases resistant to chemotherapy. In many cases, there are patients who do well with the chemo, but this cancer is just so aggressive that doctors are working to try to find different therapies to treat it. There's no cure for it, and the outcome is very poor.
And so it's characterized by people that have the sickle cell trait and don't necessarily have the disease. Is that correct?
That's correct. My brother, he actually has the sickle cell trait, healthy his entire life, and all of a sudden one day he came down with back pain, and next thing you know, we're discovering he has this rare kidney cancer. That is associated with sickle cell trait.
And we have heard, you know, the medical community for a long time used to say if you have the trait but you don't have the disease, there's not a whole lot to worry about. Is that changing now?
I believe it is changing. The more the word gets out there, that people are becoming more aware about this cancer and other associated illnesses or things that can happen with the trait that were never discussed or talked about before. So, yes, it is. It's becoming, you know, people are becoming more aware about it.
And we have a lot of stories that come up that people die suddenly because of overexertion, athletes and things of that nature that are carriers of the trait, but they don't have the disease, but they die from all kinds of situations. So there's added focus that needs to be placed on people that are carriers of the sickle cell trait, isn't there?
Absolutely. I agree 100%. There are people who right now don't even know that they have sickle cell trait. I've been in touch with several people who were diagnosed with RMC, and up until their diagnosis, they didn't even know they were sickle cell. They had a sickle cell trait. So it was just, you know, news to them, and they never heard of it and didn't know anything about it. And didn't know whether or not their other children carried it. One family didn't know if the husband or the mother was the carrier. So their entire family has to go through getting tested to find out who carries it and which other children have it.
And so with this situation, when a person is actually a person that has renal medullary carcinoma, a lot of times they're misdiagnosed, and that is never found until the disease has progressed to the point that they can't do anything about it. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. The majority of the time, patients are misdiagnosed with bronchitis, just other things, and kidney stones, urinary tract infections. And by the time they, you know, continue to go back and forth to the doctor, well, they're getting prescribed antibiotics or inhalers for bronchitis, what they think is bronchitis or a respiratory infection. And when they get back to the hospital, finally a scan has been done, and, you know, the tumor is there and cancer is spread all over. And then it's discovered. And it's kind of too late at that time to... You try to get things under control in many cases.
And so that situation happened to your brother, and as a result, yes, there's an organization that's been founded. And, Cora, I really appreciate you being with us to share some of the things that you and your brother have done. And Robin, I'm going to let you talk to her about how her organization got started and what it's doing.
That sounds great, Mike. So, Cora, I know that at some point after Herman's diagnosis, you decided that you needed an organization. How did you get started with all this, with setting it up?
Well, it was actually on 4th of July. I'll never forget. I was at home alone. My children went out for festivities with the family, and I was just sitting there, and I just was thinking to myself, what can we do? You know, this is just so rare. It's not being talked about. I've flown around to speak with several doctors about their thoughts about RMC, and I just wasn't getting anywhere. So I sat there that night, and I just thought about different names or what I could do. And I just kind of went from there. It was just baby steps trying to get it all together, but I knew something had to be done because this cancer is just so rare that nothing was being done. There was nothing on the internet when Herman was diagnosed, except, you know, within 4 months, the patient dies. And I just refused to accept that. So I just knew something had to be done, and I started the paperwork and put together a website on my own, something that I have no experience with at all, but I just wanted to get our story
feeling
out there.
So that's how you started RMC Support.
Yes,
and
that's how I
that's
started
your website. Yeah, rmcsupport.org. And when you started this organization, how far along was Herman in his treatment at that point?
It was about a year. He was about a year into his treatment. And I had discussed
it with him. Was he on chemo?
He was
at that
on chemo.
Time? Had he had his surgery?
Yes.
Yeah. So
he had his
surgery
at that time.
And he was being treated for metastases.
Yes.
That must have been terrifying. Stage 4 cancer is just, it's bad enough when they know what they're doing. But when you have something this rare, according to the statistics, there's probably only 200 people in the United States who have this cancer at any given time, probably less. So it's no wonder that nobody's heard of it and nobody knows what to do about it. But you're flying blind. And even the best doctors are just, they're going on a wing and a prayer, as the old saying goes. It was so fortunate that they found what worked for Herman.
Yes, it was. I mean, I believe a lot of prayer and finding the right doctors, the right team to help. Had MUSC here not said no, we would have never taken that 17-hour drive to Houston the following day to see Dr. Tanier. So we're truly grateful, and that they didn't know and that they weren't able to help us. But at the same time, we want them to know that there are other treatment facilities out there that specialize in this. And we just want to bring the awareness so that if someone comes to any hospital anywhere, they're able to say, okay, I know what this is, and I may not know how to treat it, but let's get in touch with this doctor. He can help us here.
Right, right. And knowing who to consult with is a big thing. Now, how did you end up going to MD Anderson from Charleston?
Herman actually did his own research from the time he was diagnosed, and he found Dr. Tanier at MD Anderson. And it's funny because there was a little mailbox under his profile picture with an email address there. So Herman emailed him, and Dr. Tanier, I'll never forget, he was out of the country. He was in Germany. And he emailed Herman back immediately. As soon as he got his email, within minutes, Herman had a message waiting for him.
That's amazing.
And It truly was. I mean, from the very beginning, it's just that we're so thankful for Dr. Tanier and all that he has done for us and all of the patients that he sees with kidney cancer. He's just truly an amazing doctor. But Dr.
Tanier, really is.
He is.
He really is.
He's a godsend.
We refer a lot of patients with rare kidney cancer down to MD Anderson and to Dr. Tanier specifically, because he's so interested in the cases that everybody else gives up on.
Yes. Yes. And he will never give up on his patients. He fights till the very end. I saw it with my brother. I could never thank him enough. Never. For all that he has done.
So when did you realize that with Herman and that he was getting better, not worse?
Honestly, I'm not sure if I ever really realized that, because it was always in the back of my head. Well, what if it comes back? Or his next appointment, there may be some growth. Because after his surgery, I went with him to an appointment, and there was some growth there. They did see some spots, and he got back on treatment again. And then shortly after, everything was fine. So it's always in the back of our minds. We're always a little bit anxious about this cancer because we just know the aggressive nature of it.
Yeah, and it's really strange how it develops. I read an article, probably the best article I've found on renal medullary carcinoma, and it said they think that it might be related to the low pressure in the kidney, because of the blood circulation. Yeah. But then they said, but everybody who has sickle cell trait or sickle cell disease has that, and only a very, very, very tiny number, like 1 in 20,000 people who carry sickle cell or sickle cell disease or sickle cell trait develop this cancer. So they don't know what the difference is. They do know that more men develop it than women, and they do know that it happens very, very young, between the ages of like 9 and 30, which is pretty terrifying. Nobody thinks of getting cancer at that age.
No, you're absolutely right. And everyone that I've been in contact with, they are very young. Children, teenagers, you know, young adults, and some adults as well. But the majority are young people. It's just, it's a devastating disease.
Now, I also read that carrying the sickle cell trait or having sickle cell disease also predisposes people to kidney disease, which is a decreased amount of kidney function, which is different from cancer. And a lot of people don't realize that they're at risk for this. So it really is important for people to know if they carry sickle cell trait.
Absolutely, it is. I didn't even know this until Herman was diagnosed and I started doing research, sitting up all night and reading. So that's something that I've learned in this 6-year journey.
So has your entire family been tested now for sickle cell trait?
We actually always knew that we had sickle cell trait. My parents told us at a very young age, and that goes back to saying we were always told if we had the trait, we had nothing to worry about. The only thing my mom ever told us was, you know, you all have sickle cell trait, so whenever you get married, make sure your spouse is also not a carrier of the trait because your child will have sickle cell disease. That's something that was always told to us. Well, nobody ever knew about RMC.
Right. Nobody knew that sickle cell trait itself had some dangerous characteristics.
Exactly.
So,
it came as a complete shock.
When did they first start putting this all together that sickle cell trait can cause kidney disease and this very deadly specific kind of kidney cancer?
Well, RMC was first discovered in 1995.
Wow.
That I know of, from articles that I've read, yeah. But that's just how rare it is. I really don't think there has been much research into it until Dr. Tenere and, you know, like in the 2000s, not too long ago, maybe 10 years ago, I'm thinking, you know, and don't quote me on that, but it's been not long ago that people really are starting to take an interest in this disease to learn more about it.
It's a pretty exciting field of study, but it's amazing to think that this cancer, as far as we know, is like only 22 years out from discovery.
Yes. And there's nothing.
That's amazing.
No.
Right.
It is. It really is. There's no sort of standard treatment, no screening test or, you know, early detection is impossible.
Other than just
so
knowing that you're
really
at risk.
Yeah. We're really hoping
to
get some sort of screening guidelines in place in the future. Maybe ultrasounds or something like that.
Right, and maybe there's going to be something that will show up in blood tests or urine tests that will be able to pin down these cases before they get so advanced. That would be wonderful progress right there.
It would. It really would.
Well, I know I have some members of my family who probably carry sickle cell trait, and I have to talk to their mom and inform her about this potential risk.
Please.
You don't want to scare people to death, but you do want them to be aware.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think also what the community needs to know, what people in general need to know, is that sickle cell trait is not race specific. It's not a black disease. Anyone can inherit. It's a blood disorder. So, you know, it's not disease. It's not specific to anyone's race. That's
right. And
another thing,
about,
I mean, I was ignorant of it.
Right. They talk about it being common in Mediterranean countries, in Hispanic populations. And I heard that they're trying to form a registry of patients to try to gather some information. And among the countries that are going to be doing this is Lebanon, which is quite interesting to me.
Oh, yes, it is. That's my greatest hope, to come up with some sort of registry. There's just nothing out there. You know, I've called the CDC. I've tried calling everywhere, and no one really knows. There's no specific number. And a lot of times people are misdiagnosed. Sometimes these patients die before they're diagnosed. And sometimes I believe it's just not classified as RMC. So the numbers are just not there. I believe there's more than the 240 cases that they say, or however, 200 and whatever cases. We believe that there are truly more. I've been in touch with several people.
Are.
I'm sure there's more. Yes.
Absolutely.
We just don't know
about
it.
There's so many people carrying this trait all across the world. And of course, a lot of them, they said Nigeria has the highest percentage of sickle cell trait carriers. And a lot of people in Nigeria are not exposed to CT scans, advanced medicine. Getting surgery is probably the only care that they could ever possibly receive if they were diagnosed with this disease. And surgery in most cases is not going to be enough because they don't find it early enough.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
So we're at about 7.5 minutes left in the broadcast, ladies. It's amazing how the time has gone. Now, we mentioned the fact during the conversation that about the formation of a registry. And I'd like to kind of change from the RMC International and RMC Incorporated and go to something that you participated in about a year and a half or 2 years ago, Cora, that's now become the RMC Alliance. And Dr. Tanier was one of the people that was instrumental in getting this together, along with Dr. Kim Rathmel, who is at Vanderbilt in Tennessee.
Yes.
And they had people from literally from all over the world that came for an intense two-day session on what to do about this cancer, didn't they?
Yes, they did. And that meeting gave me so much hope. It restored my faith in everything, because before that meeting, I had no idea that there were so many doctors out there that were actually concerned and wanting to learn more about this rare cancer. I had no clue. So that meeting meant everything to me, and I'm just so grateful to Dr. Rathmel for reaching out to me and wanting to put this together, and Dr. Tanair. I just think it's great. And, you know, we're going to meet again this year in the fall, and I cannot wait to hear the developments that have taken place thus far.
Yes, they've published some papers on it in some of the European urology journals. They're working together on getting a database together, an international database, and they have researchers from around the globe that are coming up with standards of care. They now have a standard of care in place, but it's not widely spread because a lot of people aren't aware of this cancer. And so I think promising things are forthcoming, and hopefully Dr. Tanier and Dr. Rathmel and some others are going to be able to start some clinical trials before long with some different compounds, I think. Is that what you're hearing?
Yes, and with that paper that they put together, it has truly helped a lot of patients. I've been contacted personally by patients who have been diagnosed, and their doctor had no idea what to do until they found that paper. So now they kind of know what chemos to use for their patient, and I've also been able to, of course, put them in touch with Dr. Tanier so that they can speak directly with him if they need any other help with their patients. Because not everyone, you know, is able to travel to MD Anderson, and we have patients all over the globe as well that need help with treating this type of cancer.
Absolutely, and there are numerous people, doubtless, that are at all places in the United States and other places in the world where they don't have access to some of these prominent hospitals and things. They have to make do with what they have at hand, don't they?
Yes, they do. They really do. And, you know, we hope that that changes in the future as well. One of the doctors, they have started actually collecting tissue as well from RMC patients to design cell models of this RMC and to study it more. So far they've been able to collect a couple of samples, and I'm sure we'll get some sort of update in the fall when we go for the meeting.
Yes, this will be the third meeting, won't it? Because you met last fall, and you you met in Washington when they had a pediatric conference ongoing at about the same time. So you had people that's involved with the patients that's potentially in this same age range that we're getting together about this. I think that's incredible.
Yeah. Me too. And there were so many doctors there this past October as well. And, I mean, it's just great to see everyone in the same room giving, you know, their different thoughts on this cancer and what they're doing at their hospital. It's great to have so many great minds together in the same room discussing it. It's just a great feeling. I don't know how to describe it. It's a really good feeling.
Well, Cora, you have done a tremendous job getting things together. We've got about 2 minutes left. And tell us how they can reach out and get in touch with you and your website and your organization to find additional help.
Yeah, so my website is www.rmcsupport.org. And from there, you can click on it, go to the contact, and message me. I'll get the email directly, or you can call 702-337-2873. We're also on Facebook under RMC Support. We are on Instagram and Twitter under RMC Awareness.
RMC Awareness. Robin, you found an incredible guest to talk to tonight, didn't you?
Well, it wasn't me. But
I think
we really have an incredible show today, because Cora she embodies what one person can do that changes the whole world. And people who never had hope before, who never even knew that they were at risk, will now have hope. And this is just such a wonderful thing for someone to do. It's just incredible that one person can achieve this much. So congratulations to you, Cora, and may you keep going for many, many years.
Thank you so much, Robin. And thank you, Mike,
thank you
as well.
Thank you for being with us, Cora. Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
And it pays to be a powerful patient.